Hey, Will, like I normally do, I just want to take a moment to tell our listeners to make sure they hit us up on social, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, wherever you might see us. Make sure you're sending us something. Also, you can email us directly at appalachiameetsworld@gmail.com. If you get a moment, shoot us a line, give us some feedback.
Yeah, and wherever you listen to the podcast, make sure you subscribe to Appalachia Meets World. It just helps our podcast, but it also helps you know when we're releasing a new episode.
When we talk about like how can we do development that's a win-win for as many like sectors as possible, I mean, to me that includes cultural heritage and the cultural strengths of the region. If we're not honoring those and working with them authentically, then
Appalachia Meets World, a podcast about place and perspective, but always Appalachian.
And don't forget, Will, tonight's episode is powered by SOAR.
Shaping our Appalachian region. If you're an entrepreneur out there, especially in Eastern Kentucky, check them out.
Appalachia Meets World. We're back another week. It's Will.
And Neil.
Neil, why so gloomy?
Yeah. It's a tough day, Will. Tough day. Not a day that I've been looking forward to, but a day that has hit us all at once.
Oh, wait.
It's, and, it's a delicate day.
A day that we've been discussing the last couple of weeks?
It is. It's upon us. Today is what I like to refer as D-Day.
Oh my God. Serious business.
Yeah, I'm on my way now. You know, I may be locked in during this interview, getting my mind right. So just disregard anything that I might say in the next 2 hours. Surgery is upon us.
Oh, wow. Wow. I never thought we would come to this day, but here we are. I guess next week you'll definitely have to give us an update, right?
Yeah, I hear the recovery time's like probably going to be like a week. At least that's what I'm telling my wife. I may be down and out, but I'll still come on. I'll still discuss it. I'll let y'all know how things go. But yeah, it's a somber moment, Will. Somber moment.
Yeah, that's very somber. I'm curious to find out how it goes. I'll be thinking about you.
I'm probably going to need to take some kind of sedative, maybe like a nerve pill or something. I don't know if they do that or not. They didn't tell me that. So I'm hoping they do. But, you know, it's one of those things you just gotta man up every now and then.
Yeah, man up. There you go. Well, good luck with that. A little bit of a transition. Your show, your movie Maestro got shut out over the weekend.
Shut out?
No what? Awards.
Oh, at the awards. Yeah, man. Just which goes to show that those people out there don't know anything.
But the only reason it was your movie is because it's the only one you've seen, because it was on Netflix.
That's correct. I am a supporter of Netflix. If you're not on Netflix, I'm probably not going to see you. So you better get yourself on.
High praise. We're into March.
March Madness.
We promised the appetizer bracket. That'll come out after what? Well, I guess it'll come out next week. Sunday is Selection Sunday, so we'll select the appetizer Sunday and have the bracket next week.
It's time, baby. My deviled eggs. I had some new deviled eggs this week, Will.
New?
Well, new to me. I was at a restaurant in your old stomping ground, Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
And I was down there at the 440 on Main.
Okay.
And had some deviled eggs as an appetizer. And it was a different deviled egg than I've ever had. So
how did they do it? I would
talk about it. Have you ever had them with, it had like a small crispy piece of bacon on top, as well as a jalapeno, just one slice of jalapeno.
Oh, wow. Did you, let me ask you this. So that sounds like a small bite. Did you take it all in one bite, or was it multiple bites?
So I took the jalapeno in one bite, like the whole thing with one bite of egg, and then the next bite just had the bacon on it. Gotcha. But the jalapeno had been on the entire egg, so literally with both bites I got a kick with both bites.
How was it?
It was good. It was good. I'm gonna leave it at good. I'm not gonna say that I would do it again. I think Amy, our sister, makes better deviled eggs,
You're a
but
traditionalist.
I'm a traditionalist. Exactly. I can, if somebody likes heat, like if that's your thing, then this would definitely be the way to go. It was
Gotcha.
good. I mean, I liked it, but it, you know, for me, I stick with the traditional.
Wow, I like to hear you're branching out, though. I appreciate that.
Do you have any other app news for us, Will?
I'll mention a few things. There was an article that came out in the Wall Street Journal talked about boomers on their way to Florida, actually ending up in Appalachia, and how these small towns are getting a big boom to their economy. I just found it an interesting article. We'll post it in the show notes. Another article was Canary in the Coal Mines in the Smithsonian Magazines. It's the history behind the. So you know what canary in the coal mines means, right?
Yeah.
We've always heard that saying, you know. The miners used to take canaries down into the coal mines to test for carbon monoxide gas. If the canary kind of passed out, they knew gas was in there because but this article tells the whole history of why they use canaries over mice. They talked about pit ponies. Just a cool article. We'll post in the show notes. 48C workshop we mentioned last week is in Charleston, West Virginia, coming up the last week of March. We'll post that again in the show notes. App Voices just came out. They've been on our show before with a new report on energy transition. Robert Kell, they worked with the Appalachian Center for Civic Life at Emory and Henry College with some college students to come up with this report. We'll post it in the show notes. You can check that out. It talks about energy transition and community engagement. Also, Senator Joe Manchin is leading an effort to better categorize Appalachia, West Virginia as rural when it comes to education resources. I guess a lot of the times, a lot of parts of West Virginia get categorized as urban. And he references in the article about those places being rugged or extremely rugged, and how hard it is to drive in those areas and how long it takes, and that they should actually be categorized rural instead of urban, so they can get more funding resources. So it's just an interesting article, an interesting effort that he's trying to put forth. We'll post that in the show notes. Someone that we had on the show before, we talked about a symposium he was putting on, and it's coming up. Dark Skies in Appalachian Identity, Culture, and Sense of Place. It's a Dark Skies symposium in Col at Colgate University. It's coming up April 4th through the 6th. It illuminates the connection people have either consciously or subconsciously with a dark night sky through a study of the many ways the sky is represented in a variety of artistic expressions. So they're going to have a number of well-known speakers, going to have a lot of special events, music, food. So if you're in that area, it's in the village of Hamilton, New York. It's at Colgate University. If you're in that area, a lot of Appalachian representatives will be there. Check it out. It's April 4th through the 6th. We'll post that in the show notes. Check out the website. It's got some really cool stuff going on. You can read more about Dark Skies. That's about it for App News, Neil.
It's a good segment. I enjoyed hearing all about it, even though I live in Appalachia. Sometimes you give me news that I don't even know about yet, which is, you know, I'm sure why most of our listeners listen. So thanks for that. I appreciate it. What about our guest tonight, today, Will?
I mentioned kind of these boomers landing in Appalachia and kind of reshaping what Appalachia is turning into. And that's why I wanted to mention the guest tonight. We're having her on, Dana Kuhnlein. She's from Reimagine Appalachia. When I say that to you, Neil, Reimagine Appalachia, what do you think about?
I think about kind of where the next step of Appalachia is going, like how we're going to reinvent ourselves. Is that crazy?
No, I kind of think the same thing. I think about the future, obviously, but I don't want to forget about the past. You know what I mean? When you say
Oh, yeah, for sure.
or reimagine Appalachia, you know, we have that strong cultural heritage, something that I hope the region will always hang on to, even though we reimagine a kind of a just transition for the future of Appalachia. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly where my mind goes,
Well,
just with that title.
yeah, that's interesting. Maybe we can ask Dana about that as well, where the name Reimagine comes from. You want to just get her on here since she's the expert?
Absolutely, let's do it.
And if I had a dollar for every time I've said goodbye, there's nothing in this world I couldn't buy. But a few of us are staying, and it's not a point of choice. It's not we who do the choosing, we are chosen by the place. And West Virginia chose me, sure as my own mother knows me. If I leave you, West Virginia, it don't matter where I roam. I don't know where I'm going, but I know I'm coming home.
On the episode today, we have a special guest, Dana Kuhnlein. She's the Senior Program Director for Reimagine Appalachia. It's a broad and inclusive coalition of individuals and organizations based in Appalachia and focused in Ohio, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania, or what they reference as the Ohio River Valley. It really, like I said, is a coalition, but they work towards a 21st century economy that's good for workers, communities, and the environment. Previously, she's worked for a dozen of various other Appalachian nonprofits, working to facilitate creative solutions to regional challenges. So, Dana, thank you so much for being part of the episode.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for doing this great podcast.
Our family, like most Appalachians, we're big on history, big on tradition. One of the traditions we have appetizers at the holidays. Gigantic spread of appetizers, bigger than the meal. So we wanted to ask you, do you have a favorite appetizer or holiday dish?
Oh, that is so funny. So, not to leave the culture, but my husband is from New Jersey, like they're Italian, which was very different for me. And they have this thing called pickins that they do before meals. And it's like, it is like three times as much food, but it's all Italian food. So it's very, very new for me. Like everything's pickled and the nice. Cured meats. I know. I was like, what is it? But actually I think they've, over the years, they've actually persuaded me a little bit towards that. But yeah, I like cheese and crackers can't really go wrong. So
yeah, you can't go wrong with cheese.
No. Yeah,
never
cheese.
Go wrong with cheese.
Right.
But yeah. I like the idea. We need to join forces here with the pickins and the appetizers. Sounds amazing.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe not. We might never fit. We have to all get new pants if we start doing that. So
Hey, not concerned. I just wanted to ask you, I was very vague when I described what Reimagine Appalachia actually is and what it does. So can you just let our listeners know why it was formed, kind of what it is and what the goal is of Reimagine Appalachia?
Yeah. And I think you were vague because you didn't have like 10 hours to spend describing it. It can be sometimes I don't even know what all we do. But so Reimagine actually started with a listening project, where we reached out to, you know, dozens of groups across the region and hosted meetings to get a sense of, you know, Appalachia is a region that has created tremendous amounts of wealth. And yet it has struggled to retain that wealth in our communities. And that wealth hasn't always given back to our communities in obvious ways, right? But I always like push back when people say Appalachia is poor because my gosh, it's made a lot of people very rich, right? But it hasn't kind of spread out as evenly. So the question we were asking was something like, how can we do development and investment in this region that creates a win for as many people as possible? And what are the barriers to that? And actually we started, you know, we answered these questions and we had this kind of bold vision for a really big federal investments in the region, you know, timed around, you know, the coal industry is bottoming them out because of global energy changes that we can't change as a region. They are just happening, but we know they're happening. So why aren't we preparing better for those? And a lot of other sort of reasons pointing to that Appalachia really needs and deserves these really big federal investments to kind of help, foster like all the solutions and creativity that we know the region is capable of. And if we're going to bring these investments into the region, again, how can we think about them differently that we don't just go into those same models of a couple people get really, really rich and most of the other folks kind of still struggle along with the same old situation. So that was what the questions were. As you can imagine, it's a very diverse region. We heard every possible type of answer. We decided to kind of narrow in on really thinking about like blue collar working class jobs has been a really big focus of ours, as well as jobs that in some way intersect with the climate crisis and like climate change and increased flooding and all those things that we're seeing in our region. And then, of course, part of that, too, is the, again, the shift away from fossil fuels and how that impacts the region. So we kind of that leaves a lot of stuff. And so we see ourselves at the end, we can only do so much, but we see ourselves as a convener. So we spend a lot of time introducing two people who need to talk to each other because they're doing great work in similar ways. And one's in Pennsylvania and one's in Kentucky, and otherwise they might not talk to each other. So we do a lot of convening and introductions and education and events.
So primarily when we're talking about challenges for the region, you primarily focus on sustainable employment for the region. Is that the primary goal or focus of Reimagine Appalachia?
I would say so. Yeah. I think that's probably the through line that kind of runs through everything. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned the listening sessions and how Reimagine Appalachia kind of formed from that. But from that, you also kind of put together what you referenced, or what Reimagine Appalachia references as the blueprint, or kind of this plan around some of not the challenges, but the opportunities in Appalachia. Can you just talk about what the blueprint is and maybe some of the opportunities that exist within the blueprint?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a couple years old. And so one thing that's great about this blueprint is a lot of the stuff that we recommended for investments ended up being in the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act, which are two big bills that were passed by Congress that make a lot of new funding available. So that's really exciting. But yeah, I mean, in that idea of like, how do we build a 21st century Appalachia? We kind of had our pillars around land, restoring damaged lands, restoring waters, and that includes, you know, flood resiliency, broadband and other work to modernize the grid, and manufacturing, thinking about how can we do innovate manufacturing, increase manufacturing in the region again, with the idea of like, how do we create jobs, like family sustaining good jobs for people who don't want to go to college or, you know, want to work with their hands. Updates to the transportation system, and those were the main, sort of the main tenants or like kind of work areas that the blueprint focused on. And we created job studies actually that kind of made a guess if we put X amount of money into, say, the work of broadband updating, how many jobs could that create? And so we actually worked with some scientists to create guesses on how many jobs could be created by investments in these different areas of work.
We kind of ground this podcast on place and perspective. You know, Appalachians have a really deep love for place. It's really important for Appalachians, for communities. They care deeply about their communities. I think that's kind of what sets Appalachian apart from other regions. That being said, I'm glad that you mentioned we have like this historic extractive economic history and past. Yet, I know you have currently started some recent listening sessions to maybe reimagine the blueprint or reformulate the blueprint, for lack of a better term. How are those going? And is Reimagine Appalachia really kind of re-envisioning what the future may look like in Appalachia in regards to this new blueprint?
That's such a great question. I think it's a little bit, I mean, it's yes and no. Some of what we're really digging into now is the nitty-gritty of, we have all this federal funding, we have this opportunity, it's not going to last forever, to really bring in a lot of new investments into the region. And so how do we do that both as speedily and but also the right way? And so it's looked different in our different kind of segments of work, but we've kind of been doing a mix of that big picture vision and then actually having the opportunity through all these like new things from the federal government to really puzzle out like, oh gosh, what does this really look like? We said we wanted it. What how do we do it? And so that, I mean, just for example, one project I've worked on is like, we've been saying for years we wanted more money to clean up abandoned mine lands. And we got a big chunk of that, $13 billion from the bipartisan infrastructure law. Now that's national, but a lot of those mines are in the region. And but it's gonna grow the so in the past there was some work happening to reclaim these lands, but it's gonna grow those programs by about 10 times. And that means a lot more workers. And so we've been working with labor unions in Ohio and Kentucky, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and other states to really look at, okay, how do we train these workers? How do we find these workers? And how do we make sure that these are good jobs? Historically, those jobs haven't paid well, but we're seeing like, and because as the work becomes more needed, those salaries are going up, which is really exciting. So, but yeah, we've been, like you mentioned earlier, we've been doing that with the manufacturing, a lot of other areas. So it's, but we can't answer those questions again without talking to people, right? So that's where that listening comes in. And so we have a lot of events and conversations and little reports and that we're pulling together that are trying to hear from folks in those sectors, you know, what they know and what they don't know, you know. So and then when we can find out what they don't know, then we try and say, okay, who might know that, and really try and use their expertise to kind of fill in the blanks. So
You all, like you said in the beginning, have a lot going on, especially in this historic time of, like you mentioned, federal funding, which I want to ask you about later. But I also wanted to ask you, with the name, Reimagine Appalachia, you mentioned our extractive past. Well, we also have this cultural heritage in Appalachia, especially the Ohio River Valley or Central Appalachia, where, from an employee perspective, we're very proud of our past. Of how our culture was molded or built, whether it be textile, coal, timber, steel, those employees, we have this strong cultural past. With Reimagine, how are you reimagining Appalachia while still, I guess maintaining this history that we're all so very proud of? Is that part of your thinking when you are reimagining Appalachia?
it actually really is. One of the things that when we talk about like how can we do development that's a win-win for as many like sectors as possible, I mean, to me that includes the cultural heritage and the cultural strengths of the region. If we're not honoring those and working those in authentically, then the solutions aren't gonna work as well. So I think that's absolutely essential. I think cultural work and cultural heritage is important. And I think it's also, I mean, we talk a lot about, you know, Blair Mountain and other, you know, major contributions that Appalachia has done to, you know, the labor movement, the civil rights movements, like all kinds of sectors that the region has so much to be proud of. And when you lose track of the history and the cultural strengths of the region, then that creates a lot of just, you know, heartache and confusion, I think. And the opposite side of that is it can be really empowering when you really lean into that and it feels like you. Actually, my first, so I grew up in the Midwest. You can hear in my accent. But I moved to West Virginia in 2005. So it's been 20 years now that I've worked on regional issues. But as they say, you can put a kitten in the oven, but it doesn't make it biscuits. So I
I
don't.
like it.
Yeah, I grew up in the country, so I do have some of the phrases. But anyway, but one of my first jobs was actually doing a VISTA doing cultural work, and we had kids interviewing their grandparents about, their Appalachian traditions. And it was really, you know, special to see the kids, the pride that they took in stuff that had been embarrassing, you know, like, and you're in high school, like, it's embarrassing that your grandparents, they still farm all your food or they eat beans and cornbread so much or whatever. Like, And then they would interview it and they'd be like, well, actually, it's kind of cool. But I think when you get connect disconnected from those things that give you so much strength, and like when society says you have to give up something that's so deeply personal and gives you so much strength, and then it's a really hard way to live, right? It's a hard way to be, and it's not a good foundation for community development if you're not incorporating, because there are so many strengths that come from Appalachian culture. And the coal industry, I don't know if it's the coal industry, but I think the coal operators, right? Like way back when people were getting paid money in the camps, like they knew that. And they tried to separate people out so they would infight and not get along, because they knew how strong the culture and the families and the community traditions were. So when they were trying to break the workers down, the first thing they did was try and separate people away from their culture. So it's important.
Yeah, that's so well said. A very good answer. And in that answer, you mentioned so many of our past episodes,
Okay.
like Blair Mountain. We talked about
Yeah.
the civil rights movement in Birmingham on an episode. There's so much diversity throughout Appalachia. You also talked about this kind of community approach or community-based approach with all this historic funding flowing from the federal government. Do you all work directly with communities to help put them to position themselves for this windfall of funding? Is that important for Reimagine Appalachia?
We don't do direct technical assistance, to be clear. So we don't have a big staff. We're not, getting into communities and helping people write grants. We just don't have the capacity. And there are groups that do. So what we try and do is kind of know who can offer what kind of support, and then connect people to the best place to get that. And then on top of that, we try and offer kind of convening spaces, mostly online. And so, for example, there was a big grant, the EPA Community Change Grant is a big one for this year. It's a really flexible funding stream, which is great. A lot of smaller communities, they don't like a lot of these big things. It's like, millions of dollars for this like extremely specific project. It just doesn't work for these small communities that really are looking for like diverse solutions, or things that come anyway. So, but the Community Change Grant is particularly helpful for smaller communities. And so we had a 2-hour webinar, and the first hour was a PowerPoint, and the second hour was just networking, where just like talk to people who are working on this with you. And people really, really like that. They just want to talk to each other, like other folks who are kind of tackling the same questions. I mean, our issues are so similar across the region, and people are coming up with really good solutions to them. But you're finding them all out the hard way, right? And so if you can have two people talk to each other and say, okay, this is what I learned the hard way, and this is what I learned the hard way, and then they can, tell each other this more efficient way to do, the different things. And so it's really kind of connecting the knowledge that exists is a lot of what we do.
I did want to mention one initiative that Reimagine Appalachia is part of. There was a recent award of $10 million through ARC's Arise grant for what you are referencing as manufacturing the new energy economy in Appalachia. There are a couple of partners. Catalyst Connection is one, I think, leading the charge. And Next Manufacturing Task Force is also another partner. But you essentially are assisting with many grants, small and medium-sized manufacturers in the region to transition to clean energy supply chain manufacturing. So, can you just speak to that, to maybe the grant and what you hope to accomplish with this over the next several years?
Yeah, absolutely. So Reimagine's part in this grant is really along the lines of what I just said. So it's networking, connecting people who maybe have the same type of issues and needs, and helping create the connections to make this work more successful. And so the partners at Catalyst Connection are doing a lot of the technical assistance, where they actually go in with the manufacturing sites and do those assessments that are needed. But the general idea is that, I mean, say you have a small factory and it makes widgets for natural gas extraction, And it's a little tool, and maybe that tool is suddenly no longer needed. But they could make the same sort of widget for a solar panel or a wind turbine or whatever. Like they can make a thing. But what they might not have immediately is the knowledge of what are the things that are needed to be made. And so the idea is just that in a lot of ways, that simple one of they can go around and say, okay, this is the equipment you have, and this is a mashup of types of products that would be needed for the sustainable energy future that is coming. And so we can kind of have these smaller factories to make sure that they don't get left behind as technology changes. And it takes a lot of research and like travel to kind of make those assessments as far as like what might be the kind of facility upgrade or supply chain for different products. And so having a central a partner that is thinking about that for all helping all of these manufacturers think about that makes that a lot more efficient for those smaller manufacturers that we have in the region. And so I mean, one of the things that we come into again and again in Appalachia is that we have a lot of small and medium-sized, businesses, whether it's agriculture, whether it's manufacturers. And so those businesses are particularly, they're excellent economic drivers. They're great for the community. And also they don't have everything that, they're not McDonald's. They need a little extra support sometimes to compete at the global level. So
Yeah, I just think it's a great initiative, and I look forward to what y'all can accomplish with it in the next several years. I wanted to ask you a couple of quick questions. I know that you said you moved to West Virginia from the Midwest, but why are you so passionate about the region?
I have asked myself the same question. There's a Colleen Anderson. She's a musician in West Virginia. She has a song called West Virginia Chose Me. I think part of it was my first job was doing an oral history and learning and getting so embedded in the local culture and seeing all the value and the strength that was there and also all the struggles that the region faced. And so and I mean, one thing I love about working in this region, and I've worked regionally, but it's so tight-knit. And so having worked here as long, you just know people. And I'll also say, like, I have a working class background, and I don't, when I work in other places, I just, people are, I don't always understand them. You know what I mean? Like, there's like this like white collar culture, business culture. Like, it has never, I have to translate that in my head constantly, right? And so I just working in the Appalachian region, it just made sense to me. And because it is close-knit and because I think of the cultural expectations in the region, it just suited me better as a working class kid that grew up in a farm, you know?
Coming from where I'm from, when I get asked outside the region, or when I tell people outside the region where I'm from, the first thing they want to talk about or ask about are the challenges. We always try to flip the script on this podcast and talk about the opportunities. So I wanted to ask you, what's your favorite thing to do in Appalachia?
I mean, it always comes back, to the mountains, and the food. So there's a toss up, right? But I love the water. I love a community that's built around water. I was saying how Lexington doesn't make any sense to me because it doesn't have any water in it. Like, this isn't like built around a river, so the city is like complete nonsense to me.
It's horse
But
tracking.
I love the communities built around the water. And when I first moved to West Virginia, people would take me to like their favorite swimming hole, and I'd say, oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. And somebody once said, they're all beautiful. Like every holler is beautiful. You have to see a million hollers to believe it, but they're all so beautiful. It just keeps coming. Like every single one could be a national park. So it's just astounding that, and again, I think maybe that's just coming from the Midwest where it's a lot more, there's a lot more stuff. You don't have that
Flat
much.
land, the flat land.
Yeah, the flatlands. Yeah.
Well, do you
Yeah.
have a, well, speaking of water holes, maybe do you have a favorite place in Appalachia?
I don't know. That's tricky. I've been like I get a whole I don't think I can pick one. I don't
You mentioned a song, but do you have a favorite book, maybe Appalachian book?
Oh, that's a great question. And you talked about like leading with the, like people want to lead with the challenges. And I think one thing that's hard about Appalachian literature is so much of it is really sad. And I it's not that those stories don't need told beautifully, but it can be hard. So one thing I recommend all of my interns to read is Denise Giardina's Storming Heaven. It's about the Cold Wars. So that is a really good one. And it goes over like 100 years. I'm sure you've probably talked about it on the podcast. I don't know. But that I love that one. And I love that one for folks, even people who grew up in the region, they just don't always fully get some of the history and how hard workers worked for the rights that they had and just what was stacked up against the region historically to really understand how much folks overcame. And like a lot of the challenges we still have are just, they were all written back in the 1900s, right? So I really like Storming Heaven for that reason. I like Prodigal Summer by Barbara Kingsolver because that one really is, sad things happen in it, but I think it really is about like growth and healing. So I like that it leans into those, like, again, like you said, those positive aspects of the culture and how they can be really beautiful and happy. And help you heal from, sad things will happen, of course, but like you can lean in on these cultural aspects to grow through that. So those might be two.
Great answers. Last quick question. Cornbread or biscuits?
Oh, corn. Well, golly. It depends on what you're eating with it. If I'm cooking
Yeah.
it cornbread, I don't have the patience for to make biscuits right anymore.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with cornbread.
Oh, nice. I like that answer. I'm biased towards cornbread, but I don't think there's a wrong answer in that question. One question we ask everyone: what's the first thing that comes to mind when I say the word Appalachia?
I think I get a picture of mountains, that classic, all those kind of mountains kind of folding in on each other,
Yeah,
like
very
rippling
beautiful.
water. Yes.
It always comes back to water for you. I'm
I got a thing for water. I
trying to
do. Yeah.
understand. Okay, like I mentioned, we ground our podcast on place and perspective. Place is really important for Neil and I, really important for Appalachia. So we wanted to ask you, just where do you call home? What makes it home for you? What makes it unique?
Well, I actually live in Cincinnati these days, and I moved here because my husband was working here, and I wanted to live in the same town as him. It really is about it's about family and it's about connection, and I think family can be what you make it. You can find your family. And I really like old places. So my house is 130 years old, and I love old buildings and thinking about the history there and all the people that have come there before. So or any kind of work to preserve old buildings and preserve old downtowns, it gets me so excited because I just love taking something that has been useful for so long and making it into something new. So I think that, I don't know, I feel like any place can be home if you can find yourself in it and find yourself in the history. Maybe that's what I'll say because I've moved around a lot.
Yeah.
And so then it's like in all these places, where what became home, and yeah, that might come what it be what it comes down to for me.
I wanted to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know, we've talked about all the things that Reimagine Appalachia does as a convener, the initiatives that you're involved in, but how can people find out more about Reimagine Appalachia or even get involved with what you're doing?
So we have a lot of events. We have our website is just reimagineappalachia.org, and then we keep really busy on social media on Instagram and Twitter or whatever it's called now. And so if you do social media or Facebook, we're on Facebook, LinkedIn, all that stuff. But we really do have an open door policy. We try to make our events as open as possible for folks to come and meet each other and network. So if you check out our website, you'll see the upcoming events and lots of information on how to get involved.
That's great. And I will say that you all do have a lot of newsworthy items on your website. You're definitely up to date on the news. So for the listeners out there, definitely check their website out, check out the news items and all the things that they have going on. Thank you so much, Dana, for being on the episode, for all the work that you're doing, not only for Reimagine Appalachia, but for the region as a whole and all the work that you've done historically for Appalachia as a region. So thanks.
No, thank you. And thanks for doing this podcast. I'm really excited. And those were great questions. So thanks for all the thoughtful questions.
Will, great stuff from Reimagine Appalachia. Such a great organization. Love the work that they're doing in Appalachia, especially East Kentucky. So great, another great episode.
Yeah, well, we want to thank Dana again for being on the show. We appreciate her talking about what Reimagine Appalachia is, what they're doing in regards to convening organizations around kind of this just transition, especially around the energy economy in Appalachia. So we appreciate her time. It was definitely interesting to hear her talk about how the name Reimagine Appalachia was towards the future, but not forgetting about the past.
Absolutely. With that being said, you know, talking about Appalachia, as we always do, you know, one thing we always like to do is highlight a business. Do you have an Appalachian business you'd like to highlight tonight?
Yeah, I do. The Appalachian Arts Craft Center. It's celebrating more than 50 years of service and over 200 members. It's located off exit 122 on I-75 between Clinton and Norris, Tennessee. It really began as a community craft center in 1970 in the back room of a grocery store and was founded by Grace Foster and Sarah Shepherd Starr. They got some early assistance from the Tennessee Arts Commission and the Museum of Appalachia and gained their 501c3 status. And it really helps promote local arts and crafts from the area, especially Tennessee arts and crafts, one-of-a-kind handmade Tennessee arts and crafts. You can shop in person. You can shop online. But they also have a number of education and mentoring opportunities in the art and craft. They have studios to explore and develop your skills. And like I mentioned, the retail market for one-of-a-kind qualified artists in and around Appalachia. So definitely check this place out, especially if you're in shopping for this, you know, one-of-a-kind Appalachian arts. So you can check them out online at shop.appalachianarts.net. We'll post it in the show notes. But you can also find them in Clinton, Tennessee, just off exit 122. They're open every day from 10 to 6, except for Sunday from 1 to 5. So check them out. It's a cool place. Like I mentioned, one-of-a-kind arts.
Love it. Good stuff, Will.
Well, good luck today, Neil. I wanted to reiterate that on your D-Day experience. We definitely want to hear about it.
Yeah, I hope you guys will think about me today over the next couple hours and maybe even say a prayer for me. Thanks to all our listeners.
Yep, we'll be there in spirit. So we want to thank Dana again for taking the time to talk about Reimagine Appalachia, to talk about the organization, to talk about some things they got going on and all the efforts they're doing throughout the region. So appreciate it. And I guess we can end it like we usually do. Till next time.
Peace.
I'm up in the mountains again. I'm getting lighter. The air's getting thin. Now I'm facing down with a grin. I've been in the city too long. Sidewalks and buildings and singing sad songs. Now I'm back up where I belong. I'm in the mountains.